Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX and the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. This program is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. You're invited to participate in today's discussion by calling in your question to 800-549-8855, and they'll take your question for the panel, or you can email your question to voices@kcbx.org. April is National Arab Heritage Month. We're celebrating with host Lotta Murdy and her guests today as they pay tribute to the contributions of Arab Americans and Arabic-speaking Americans. She'll talk with members of the Arab American community on the Central Coast about Arab American heritage and culture. Right now, let's join Lotta and her guests. Over to you, Lotta.
Thank you, Brad. Listeners, did you know that April is National Arab American Heritage Month before tuning in to today's show? And do you know what it means to be Arab American today, especially on California's Central Coast? I myself did not know the answers to these questions until meeting today's guests. Dr. Farah Al-Naqib, Assistant Professor of History at Cal Poly and a specialist on the history of the modern Middle East. Sandra Sarouf, community member and cultural consultant, and Rola El-Barberi, a student at Cuesta College. Welcome, Farah, Sandra, and Rola. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
So, Farah, I'd like to start by asking you a question. Could you please tell us about Arab American Heritage Month? What's the history behind it?
Well, actually, I'm going to be perfectly honest. I actually didn't know that April was Arab American Heritage Month myself until last year, which was, I think, the first year that it was made national. But I learned about that April was Arab American Heritage Month from Sandra. So I'm actually going to throw that question over to her because I think she's better equipped to answer that.
It's all been relatively new, and it was nationally recognized last year under the Biden administration. But Arab American Heritage Month was born out of a grassroots effort by Arab Americans to gain acknowledgement and representation of our communities. And it started really local in different cities and different school boards started to adopt it in different counties, you know, to offer representation as well as to help quell the bigotry and offer a wider lens of what it means to be Arab American. So it was decentralized at first, and then in 2017, an organization called Arab America Foundation launched formal efforts to nationalize it. And then in 2019, Rashid Tlaib and Debbie Dingell, representatives, introduced legislation. And then in 2021, it was formally recognized. And it's really significant because I think it speaks to the Arab American experience in the United States of being sometimes hyper-visible, invisible. Like, when are we represented? How are we represented? When will we get recognition? So I think it's been significant for our community to have that recognition on a national level. And it's the first year actually where I've actually seen things, you know, in social media, in different venues saying, hey, it's Arab American Heritage Month, where my entire life, I really never saw that.
Why April? Is that significant in any way?
You know, I'm not sure why it's April. Anybody? I had that same question. I didn't research it.
I was going to say maybe because it's Ramadan, but I don't think so. Because Ramadan changes like every year. It comes like earlier every year, so.
Yeah, it seems to fall sometime in there, but not always.
Ramadan was in April last year, too.
Yeah.
Like April and May together, kind of.
And what are the dates of Ramadan this year?
It started April 2nd, and I think we're like April 2nd. Yeah, it'll be over by like May 3rd, I guess. I think, May 3rd, May 2nd. Actually, no, the feast starts May 3rd. can be done May 2nd.
Thank you, Rola. So I'm guessing that for some of our listeners, it's the first time they've ever heard of Arab American Heritage Month. Why is it not as well known as other heritage or history months, like Hispanic Heritage Month from September to October, Black History Month in February, or Asian American Heritage Month in May? Farah, would you like to address that?
Well, I think part of it is, you know, somewhat, you know, building off what Sandra was saying, is that it is relatively new on a national level. Like I mentioned, you know, last year I moved here to the area, but also to the United States from the Middle East in 2018. So I didn't know that this had happened because I was just sort of becoming, you know, more part of the community until Sandra had mentioned it to me. So I think that's also part of the issue, is that it's only just been given this national recognition. So I think communities where there have been large Arab American communities, maybe it's been more known, as Sandra was saying, a lot of that was happening on more of the smaller scale or community level. But now the recognition on the national level, I think, is why it's just, people are just starting to hear about it and learn more about, which is great, because I think it also offers then the opportunity for people to learn more about the history of the Arab American community in the United States more broadly.
And I think it speaks to, and we might talk about this later, you know, it's, we're not even officially on the census, right? So it speaks to this idea of we're considered white sometimes when it's convenient. We're not considered white when it's not convenient. And so just the idea of Arab American representation and having a Heritage Month, I think it has been messy, right? Just given the history of the Arab diaspora in the United States of America.
Did you have something to add, Rola?
No, but I totally agree with what Sandra said about, like, how, like, why are we still considered white? Or, like, sometimes it's just put others, because I don't consider myself white. So I don't know. Sometimes it says, like, Middle Eastern. Like, but I've only seen this, like, once or twice.
On forms?
Yeah.
So that leads into my next question. What does Arab American mean? What does it mean to be Arab American to each of you? Farah, would you like to start?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question for me, because it's something that I'm personally still figuring out. As I mentioned, I'm a new immigrant to the United States, so I'm still in the process of, quote unquote, becoming Arab American. I'm of Middle Eastern descent. I'm originally from Kuwait, which is where I was born and raised. I moved here in 2018 to teach at Cal Poly, so I'm an Arab immigrant, and I am becoming, therefore, an Arab American. And it's something that I'm still in the throes and processes of figuring out what that means for myself, and also as being part of this broader community. It's never something, I mean, I've lived in the U.S. at different stages of my life. I lived, you know, I was an undergraduate in Washington, D.C. I did my graduate school in London. So I've lived in many places, but my identity was always Middle Eastern, right? It was never any question. I was from Kuwait, and I understood where I fit in many variety of ways in that identity, and how it evolved and changed over time. The areas of that identity, or the parts of that identity that I was also challenging and dealing with and grappling with in my own life. But then moving to the US almost 4 years ago has made me start to rethink all of those questions. Sort of as Rola was just saying, the first time I was really forced to think about this in a more critical way was right when I was filling out the paperwork at Cal Poly as my personnel paperwork. It was the first time I had seen that, where it said, you know, ethnicity, race, white, and then in parentheses it said including Middle Eastern. And I was like, oh, I didn't know I was white, you know, and I checked that box. But that was one of the first instances right off the bat where I was immediately put into this position of having to think about, well, what does that even mean for me, you know, as a person of Middle Eastern descent, knowing all of the context of what I was coming into as an Arab immigrant, and knowing what kind of representations and perceptions exist in the United States about people of Middle Eastern background, and figuring out how to grapple that, but then also then this almost paradoxical identity of being identified as white, at least on paper, Which again is still something I think many of us are grappling with. Sandra had mentioned this notion of invisibility versus hypervisibility, but I'll let the other panelists also address their ideas.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Arab American, Pan Arab is a very U.S. American concept, right? Because there is so much diversity within the Arab world, and so it's really considered an ethno-linguistic category as far as there's 23 Arab-speaking countries in the world around that. And so everybody that is Arab-speaking is lumped into this Arab-American label, which minimizes the amount of diversity and ethnic heritage that exists from the Arab world, right? You got Middle Eastern, Southwest Asian, North African. So all of that encompasses being Arab American, and also it's something I immigrated, my family immigrated here when I was young, about 5 years old. So I grew up in, you know, the US school system and kind of lived this bicultural life my whole life, knowing to navigate who to be, when to be, and to navigate those two worlds at different times, and when it was okay to be Arab American or Middle Eastern, or when it wasn't okay to be. And a lot of living in those in-between spaces. Rola, I don't know if you want to add.
Nah, I can relate to what Farah said, because I also moved here like not that long ago, and I'm not American yet, so I'm like, I was confused at first when I went here, like, what am I? And some people would be like, oh, because like, since you're Egyptian, you're from Africa, that means you're African-American. But I'm like, no, but that's like, it's just weird. I didn't know what I was. I'm kind of still figuring out now what I am, since I'm also not American. So it's just like, it sounds weird, like you don't know what you are here.
Well, and I think American is also bigger than just having a paper, right? It's being part of a culture and adapting and integrating and all that comes along mm-hmm. with that. And being American is just such a tapestry mm-hmm. Of people.
I think one thing I'm hearing that's very similar in our experiences is Sandra and Rola. Is we grew up in what we were always known and called the third culture kids in my school. So growing up in Kuwait in the Middle East, but I went to an American school and it was a very international school from, you know, K through 12. It was very international, it was very cosmopolitan, which Kuwait in general was, as Egypt is as well. And so we grew up in these very multicultural environments where we were always a multiple sort of split cultural personalities, right? As Sandra, you were saying, we never grew up as neither here nor there. So even in Kuwait, we were always sort of the American school, the American kind of kids, Americanized. But so we always grew up in this sort of not quite here, not quite there. And it just became part of who we are. And that was the sort of multicultural, sort of cosmopolitan, identities that we sort of grew up with. So it's interesting to be looking at that then from here, from this perspective in the American context, and how we sort of balance all of those different, but I agree with what Sandra was saying, there's so much heterogeneity, there's so much variety and diversity, that even to say Arab American is one thing, even for each of us, it's never just one thing.
I think each of your experiences really speaks to that and the diversity of the Arab American community. And I want to get back to that in just a minute. But for right now, I'd like to remind our listeners that I'm Lada Murthy with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. The voices with mine today are Dr. Farah Al-Nakib, an assistant professor of history at Cal Poly, who specializes in the history of the modern Middle East, Sandra Sarouf, a Central Coast community member and cultural consultant, and Rola El-Barberi, a Cuesta College student. And we are all talking about Arab American Heritage Month, Arab American identity, and the Arab American community on the Central Coast. We invite and welcome you to bring your questions or comments about today's topic to our guests. To do that, call 805-549-8855, or you can email them to voices@kcbx.org. So we've been talking about all of the different meanings that Arab American has in the United States, and the different meanings it has for each of you in your own lives and your experiences. But I'd like to ask that same question a little bit differently. What does Arab American not mean to each of you? What are some things that people have assumed Arab American means or is, but that you feel don't or are not a part of Arab American identity?
I'll jump in with one, and I'm going to put my historian's hat on, of course, but I mean, obviously, this isn't speaking to my own personal experience, because as I mentioned, I am a new immigrant. But I think there's also one of the misconceptions is that Arab Americans, that Arabs in general, people of Middle Eastern descent more generally, are new immigrants to the United States, are a relatively new phenomenon of either the past decade or few decades, right? And I think that's one of the, particularly here in California, I think that's definitely one of the misconceptions or the unknown aspects of Arab American history, is that, you know, Arab American, the first, you know, Arab immigrants to the United States were, you know, came from as early as the late 19th century onwards. And there's been different waves of Arab immigration to the United States, and California in particular was one of the places where a lot of those immigrants came. And actually, where the largest percentage of people, of Americans of Middle Eastern descent in the country live, are in the state of California. So I think that's also one of the misconceptions, is that there's a very long history of Arab immigration to the United States, to California. Arab Americans have played, along with many other immigrant groups, have played a significant role in shaping a particular kind of California cultural identity. And I think that that's something that's important to know about, and that is usually left out. Of especially in media representations, media discourse. This is really an unknown aspect of the Arab American community, particularly in California, is how much history there is and cultural contributions there are of Arab Americans.
And so how do each of you experience that personally? Sort of the not being familiar, or the lack of familiarity in the U.S. with this long history and culture? Or what are some mistaken assumptions that people make about you? Go ahead, Sandra.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I would say is we're not terrorists. We're not exotic. We're not oppressed. We're not uncivilized. We don't sleep in tents and I'll have camels. You know, these are just some of the questions I will often get when I say I'm Middle Eastern or Arab. And I know there's never any intention of harm, and there's always curiosity, and it's really just a lack of a greater worldview, while at the same time understanding the representations that most U.S. Americans get is very, very limited about what, when you say the word Arab, what comes up to mind, right? So often, and also that all Arabs are not Muslims. And you're very diverse. We're Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Sikh, right? There's so many different religions within the Arab world. Actually, only about 20% of Arabs are Muslim, or 60% are South Asian. So it's, those are some of the misconceptions often, and then the questions that are asked, especially this idea of uneducated or uncivilized, and which Farah speaks to, like the long history of contributions we've had in this country, where there's this idea, we're all new, we're, you know, and the recent bans on immigration and the limitations. So yeah, that's, you know, when people ask, I can see it in people's faces as soon as I say where I'm from, or what, like the wheels are turning, like, oh, you don't look Arab, or, you know.
I can totally like agree to what you said because I moved here like straight from Egypt, and I was a freshman in high school. So of course, you know, high school, it was the worst experience ever. I got asked like about some weird like stuff. Like I used to get, because I'm Muslim, people used to be like, "Oh, like do you speak Muslim?" And I'd be like, that's not even possible. And I mean, I got bullied a lot, like, because, you know, since you're Arab, you're Muslim, of course you're a terrorist to them. I was called a terrorist a lot, but I just hate the fact that like you'd assume, especially in high school and like in like middle school, because they're kids, like, you know, bullies, it's like it's gonna happen in high school, or like it's in, like in junior high in general, to there's got to be a bully to just like say that, you know, like that Arabs or Muslims are terrorists. And also, most of the people, like when I moved here and tell like everyone that I'm Egyptian, most of them didn't know where Egypt was. And I tell them that it's like in Africa, they'd be like, "Oh, really? Like we've never, like does that mean that you're African?" And I'd be like, "Kind of, yeah." They'd be like, "So you're black?" And I'd be like, "No." So they'd be like, "What?" It's just no one really knew anything. Didn't really, I don't think it, especially in, I don't know, I'm not sure about any other areas, but I know in our area they don't really educate people about like who, like what are Arabs, Middle East, where are they, like the countries are, what's the difference between Middle Eastern country, or like, yeah, the Middle East and like Arabs. And yes, as you said, everyone assumed that if you're Arab, you're Muslim, which is totally not true. One of my really like close friends, he lives in Florida, and he moved here like also not a long time ago, like 5 years ago. And he's Christian, he's Coptic, and everyone used to call him a terrorist and call him Muslim because he was just Arab, which is dumb to me.
You know, and I think what Rilla is really touching on there is, especially, you know, younger people who are not getting learning about this region and the history and the geography and in classes, where they get their information from is the media representations, right? And our media representations and Hollywood representations of people of Middle Eastern descent have remained remarkably consistent for decades. Really, the stereotypes and the representations of Arabs and Muslims and people of Middle Eastern descent in those spaces has not really changed. You know, there's been some effort, there's been tremendous effort, you know, to among members of the Arab American community to really, you know, change some of those stereotypes and representations. But I think that's also where a lot of the stereotypes and the problems and the challenges that members of the community face comes from. Well, how do we stack up against those stereotypes, right? And how are we supposed to, like Sandra was saying, when people say, "Oh, you're from Middle Eastern, you're from the Middle East," people would tell me the same thing, that somehow you see the wheels turning, as Sandra, as you're saying, in their mind, like, you don't align with what I see on the news, or you don't align with what I see in movies, you know, and somehow then you must be exceptional somehow on it to the norm. And I say, absolutely not. You know, the vast majority, that what you're seeing in media representations, what you're seeing in Hollywood, that's the exception, not us, you know. And I think that's part of the things, the issues that we grapple with. And I think that was where this notion of, you know, being labeled as white on the American, on the census and an official discourse, and that's been since the early 20th century. That was where, you know, we can talk about the history of that at another time, but that it's been more than a century that American Middle Easterners have been identified as white officially in the United States. But then, of course, as we know, off paper, we're, pe Middle Easterners are not, no longer, at least since the latter half of the 20th century, we're always seen as an other, like other minoritized groups are as well. And I think that's part of the issue too, that we're constantly sort of navigating.
And I know a lot of these issues are what Arab American Heritage Month events held here on the Central Coast have addressed, have discussed. So, Sandra, could you talk some more about those events, the Arab American Heritage Month events that have taken place on the Central Coast?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Well, it started last year. Hala and I were walking, and it was Arab American Heritage Month was coming up, and I was like, oh, we should do something. And then we roped Farah in, and the three of us started to plan, because we've all been kind of longing for this representation and education and wanting to connect with our community. So last year we had, we organized a panel with Sarah Gualtieri. We also did some story times at the library. I can't remember what else we did, Farah, but we brought some, hopefully, opportunities to expand that lens. We showed the movie Real Bad Arabs, which really spoke to those stereotypes and was actually painful to watch, but to, you know, unpack that and the representations and stereotypes that occur. And so this year we're also going to be planning some events. This was one of them, having us here on the radio, as well as a cooking demo. Farah can speak to a couple panels we're going to be organizing through Cal Poly, and doing some story times, which I always love, you know, starting with the toddlers and sharing the books and the songs and the stories and expanding that lens of who we are and how we're part of the community.
Yeah, we're trying to balance. I mean, there's a lot of components involved. One of the things that we're really trying to do is start at the basic level of community building, getting to know who's out there, who's interested in getting involved in different kinds of things. We're also balancing between sort of more culturally oriented activities, but also academic and scholarly events as well. And as Sandra mentioned, you know, working with the library, with children. So we're trying to sort of plan events at different levels, and the events that we're planning this year, actually, I think also speak to what Rola was mentioning earlier. We're planning two events around the field of Arab American studies as a scholarly field. So the first one talks about advancements in the field, Arab American studies, even at both the K-12 level and also at university levels, tends to be left out in a lot of areas. So that's perhaps something when we can talk about in terms of the events that we're planning and how to address this absence of Arab American studies in both K-12 and university level, educational institutions.
Wonderful. We can talk some more about that after our break. We are going to take a short break right now to hear from our studio and a little bit of music. Over to you, Brad.
And we will return to Central Coast Voices in just a moment. A look at the KCBX community calendar tells us that the Bayosis Kiwanis Club is hosting its annual Easter egg hunt on April 16th on the lawn by the South Bay Community Center in Los Osos. This is a free family event with an egg hunt for children up to 10 years old, plus prizes awarded for the best costume or best colored egg. If you'd like to learn more, you can visit kiwanisbayosos.org. We'll return to Central Coast Voices in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Frank Lanzone, General Manager at KCBX, taking a quick moment to say thanks for renewing your support or becoming a new member during our Spring Pledge Drive, and to all who continue your support with an ongoing sustaining pledge. Your generosity ensures the success of public radio on the Central Coast, providing outstanding news reporting, thought-provoking discussions, and great music every day. We're all grateful to live and work in a community that values the programming public radio KCBX provides. Thank you.
New research shows that there is a cost difference for products that are marketed for women.
I mean, one very simple reason is simply because companies can get away with it.
I'm Rima Khreis, Sheflation and Consumer Costs, next time on Marketplace.
On the next Fresh Air, the midterms, which will determine who controls Congress. Our guest will be New York Times political correspondent Shane Goldmacher. Recently, he's written about wealthy Republicans forming secret coalitions to wield power outside traditional party machinery, and about how the primaries are testing Trump's power within the party. Join us.
That's all ahead today on KCBX. Latino USA comes our way at 2 o'clock, followed by Fresh Air at 3, and then Marketplace at 4. Right now, let's return to Lotta Murty and her guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Lotta.
Thanks, Brad. Welcome back to Central Coast Voices. I am on with Dr. Farah Al-Nakib, a specialist in modern Middle East history and Assistant Professor of History at Cal Poly. Also with me today is Sandra Saruth, Cultural Consultant and Community Member of the Central Coast, and Rola El Barberi, a student at Cuesta College. And we are talking about the Central Coast's Arab American community in relation to Arab American Heritage Month, which is April of every year. I'd like to remind our listeners that if you have a question for today's guests or a comment for our discussion, we would love to hear from you. Call 805-549-8855, or you can email questions and comments to voices@kcbx.org, and we will get them on the air. So right before the break, we were talking about Arab American Heritage Month as it's been recognized and celebrated on the Central Coast. And I think, Farah, you had some more to say about some of the events. But you're muted.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that two of the we're planning a couple of events at Cal Poly. One actually for this month. The next event will be in May. So it'll be a continuation, but we're looking at issues in Arab American studies, and more broadly, not even just Arab. We use more the term SWANA, Southwest Asian North African, so that would be a bit more inclusive too. But the state of the field, it is a field that is very vibrant, is thriving, but tends to often be missing in a lot of history departments, ethnic studies programs. You know, you don't really have a lot of courses or programs that are particularly focused on Arab American studies as you do with other sort of ethnic studies fields. And so that's something that we're going to be discussing. We're talking about, you know, what are some of the major advancements that have been occurring in the field, as well as, you know, what the importance of and challenges facing teaching Arab American studies at the K-12 and university levels in California. And so those are events that we'll be hosting at Cal Poly. And again, we feel like it's important to have some of those critical discussions too about the teaching and learning about this region.
I'm glad you brought up ethnic studies, because of course that is a topic of much discussion in the state. I believe there will be ethnic studies requirements now in California high schools. Is there a discussion about Arab American studies courses or curriculum at the high school level?
Yeah, well, I think that's part of the reasoning why we want to have this second panel to address that, because there, as the model curriculum was being developed, there was a lot of efforts by Arab American organizations to include the Arab American experience. And there was a lot of pushback as well, because it was also going to speak to the Palestinian experience and what happened. And then we're often lumped into the Asian category, but then left out of that conversation. And it also kind of speaks back to this, where are we on the census data, right? If we're right, then we're not really white, we're not really Asian, but we're not really African. So it's just uncovers all of this messiness. But yes, there have been movements to get Arab American representation in the ethnic studies at the high school level. There was a lot of pushback, so it didn't go through. But I know there is continued work to get that representation into the model curriculums. And I know different high schools have done it in different ways, and now they're trying to kind of, what is the word, make it more cohesive and have a model curriculum for every high school. So there is that push to do it, and knowing there's been pushback, which is really upsetting, right? That, again, we have to fight to have that representation and the multiple ethnicities and very diverse Arab American experience shared.
Do you know what high schools have successfully implemented an Arab American studies course or curriculum?
Not at high school.
Okay. Well, Rola, you came in to the U.S. as a high school student, right? What would it have meant to you to have had an Arab American studies course in high school. And you went to Morro Bay?
Yeah, I went to Morro Bay High
School. What would it have meant to you to have had a course like that available to you?
I mean, it could have been different. Like, it could have been a different experience to me because, like, so other, like, people that, like, used to ask me, like, questions about, like, what are you, how are you like that, are you terrorist, blah, 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 all that. They could have known what that is, actually. It could have helped, and especially because I think it was only me, my brother, and there was, like, one more, there was, like, a one girl in my school that was also, like, Syrian, she was also Arab. It was just the three of us. So there's not really a lot, like, of us in my area. We live in a small, like, little city. So, but it could have been different for, it could have been different for me. Like, people would know what I am, where I came from, know more about my culture, know that it's not, like, we're not, like, what the social media, like, shows. Like, we're not, like, we don't have really strict parents that wouldn't let us do anything like that. Women don't have right. That's all not true. It's just, like, it could have been different for other students to know who we are, what we're really like, what our culture is, and all that.
Thank you. So we've been talking about Arab American Heritage Month events here on the Central Coast, but what are some other important occasions or events the Arab American community of the Central Coast recognizes or celebrates at other times of the year outside of the month of April? So we talked about Ramadan being in April and sometimes May, and that's likely why Arab American Heritage Month is recognized in April. What are some other occasions and events that the Arab American community has here on the Central Coast?
I should just note that because Ramadan is on the lunar calendar, so it changes every year. So it keeps getting earlier and earlier. So eventually it'd be out and be in March and February, and, you know, but for now we happen to be falling into this April, May period. Just to.
No, I'm glad you noted that, because I think there are many, many cultures and faith traditions that operate on a lunar calendar. So yes, it's different every year. You know, as is Lunar New Year. So that's good to keep in mind. Thank you for noting that. We do have a listener comment. Leslie from San Luis Obispo says, April was probably chosen because Easter and Passover are also celebrated during April. Leslie also says that as an American Jewish person, she is often perplexed by the question of which box to select. Thank you, Leslie. Do you have any responses to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it speaks to the diversity within the Arab world and the varied religions we practice. I still don't know 100% sure why it was in April, but yeah, there's Passover, Easter, Ramadan, which again, varies throughout the year. And to get back to your question, Latza, about the other ways Arab Americans come together, I think often it does go around religious holidays as well as American holidays. You know, where we celebrate Thanksgiving together, and we might have turkey, but we'll also have hummus and pita bread. And so we adopt the traditions in the context that we live, and we come together for those celebrations. There's also for music and dance, there's the Cal Poly Arab Music Ensemble, which has been great. And I see the community come together to listen to the music. I used to direct the dances for the ensemble. So through having different cultural and artistic events, we come together. So I'd say those, you know, individually and like decentralized, we come together in community.
Can I jump in and speak to the second half of the question or the comment that the listener Leslie Inslow had mentioned? She said that As an American Jewish person, she's also often perplexed by the question of which box to select. And I think that's also really, you know, speaks to a very shared history there also, especially some of the earliest Arab immigrants to the United States and some of the early Jewish immigrants to the United States. You know, that immigration, you know, sort of was occurring around the same time, late 19th, early 20th century. And, you know, the two communities faced very similar challenges at that time, right? And this was a shared experience, particularly leading into the early to mid 1920s of immigration restriction, things like the Johnson-Reed Act of Immigration Act of 1924, which was putting restrictions on immigrants, particularly from non-Northern European areas. It was meant to put a restrictions on immigrants coming from, you know, Eastern Europe, from Italian immigrants, Jewish immigrants, as well as from the Middle East. And it was in that context that actually Middle Eastern communities, there were several lawsuits that were passed for in order for people of Middle Eastern descent to actually be identified as white in order to be eligible for citizenship. You know, and so there is a very deep shared history there as immigrants, particularly earlier immigrants, and the history of immigration, which I think puts, as Leslie was mentioning, a similar sort of question of, you know, how we identify as, you know, what, and that sort of collective or shared immigrant experience of at certain times not being identified as white, but then what were the immigrant sort of processes of quote unquote becoming white or being identified in American society as white? And I think that speaks to some of the questions that many of us still have, like, where do I, you know, again, what box do I check in that context? I think that was an important comment to make because it speaks to that very similar shared history.
Thank you. So there's been a lot of reference to the history of the Arab American community in the United States as a whole, as well as the Arab American community here on the Central Coast. So I'm wondering if my guests today, if you could make a connection or link the two in telling us about the history of the Arab American community on the Central Coast specifically. Do you know how it began, and what brought Arab immigrants or Arab Americans to the Central Coast of California?
I don't know that history, I guess professionally, like colloquially, or who I've talked to in the community and how long they've been here. It's also part of a bigger project where working on to collect those oral histories to better understand that that story, that immigration story to the Central Coast through the Arab American perspective. So yeah, I think, and I also think that speaks to the idea that it's hard to identify who we are, right? Because we aren't a box to check, like within the school districts, how, unless you're an English learner and it's identified that you speak Arabic, we don't really know, right? It speaks to public health issues. It speaks to the bigger issue of how can we be represented if we're not counted? And so I think if there's a bigger question in understanding what is that history and how can we make efforts to learn it and to better understand. I mean, I know here in Los Osos, Syrian families have been here for, you know, three decades, as well as throughout North County and South County. So we're here, we've been here, yet that specific story you're asking, Lata, I'm not sure we know yet. And Farah, you did a project with your students last year, right, along those lines?
Yeah, in a class that I teach on oral history, so learning how students learn how to conduct community-oriented oral history projects, and we focused on the Arab and Iranian community of SLO counties, communities, particularly for that reason, because it's a history that I don't really know, and we were sort of wanting to uncover and investigate that, and what we found was a lot of variety. There was no singular sort of history or narrative, and I think part of it also, there's a lot of members of the Cal Poly community who are of Middle Eastern descent, but who came at different stages of their lives and career. So there isn't a singular sort of, as far as I know so far, story, you know, of the Arab immigration. But as Sandra was saying, there are communities that have very longer, deeper histories in this area. Part of our sort of efforts at sort of getting to know the community is partly for that reason, is to get to know that history and experience. But it goes to the point Sandra made right off the bat, right? It's, there's so much diversity and variety, including just in our little area here on the Central Coast, where we are a small community of people of Middle Eastern descent. And even there, there's just so much variance and so much variety.
I'm Lana Murthy with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's show and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It's available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you will find this show and many others to choose from. Today I am talking with Dr. Farah Al-Nakib, an assistant professor of history at Cal Poly, who specializes in modern Middle East history. I'm also speaking with Sandra Sarouf, a cultural consultant and Central Coast community member, and Rola El-Barberi, a Cuesta College student. So we still have a little more time for listeners' emailed questions or comments at voices@kcbx.org. But right before this announcement, we were talking about the history of the Arab American community here on the Central Coast and how it's a history that's still being written, still being uncovered and told. The stories are still being told. But I'm sure each of you has a personal history and story of what brought you or your family to this area, to the Central Coast. Rola, would you mind sharing what brought your family here to the Central Coast?
Yeah, my dad was like applying for jobs at like different like countries, and he got into Cal Poly, and that's why we were all like, we just went with him because he just didn't want to be alone here.
And do you want to stay?
I do want to stay. I do, but I also want to like visit every year. Like visit back every year.
Visit Cairo?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sandra, what brought your family or you here to this area?
Yeah, we immigrated to the United States when I was young because of the Lebanese Civil War. We left Lebanon and bounced around countries for a while and ended up in Orange County, California. So I grew up most of my youth there. Then I went to school at UC Santa Barbara and then moved up to the Central Coast here for a job working for an environmental nonprofit. And I didn't really think I would stay in San Luis Obispo, you know, my idea of San Luis Obispo, I didn't know anything about it. I would go from Santa Barbara to San Francisco on the Greyhound bus. And I remember, you know, parking at that Circle K on the Greyhound bus and seeing tumbleweeds roll down the street. And I thought, what a dreary little town. Like, I didn't know anything about it. And I ended up getting a job here. And of course, saw a much bigger picture of this county and loved it and met my husband and now we're in Los Osos and I have my kids. And so we're settled here. And part of my passion and my work is really this cross-cultural awareness, right? My own lived experience, growing up bicultural, raising my children here, and wanting them to also know their heritage and their history and bringing those experiences here. And part of the motivation in sharing about Arab American Heritage Month and having that forum to do so. So
my story is a little bit, I was born and raised in Kuwait. I did have some connections to California growing up. We used to spend from the ages of when I was about 5 to about maybe 15, we spent summers in Mission Viejo, which is also coincidentally where Sandra lived, although we never knew each other back then. Which is another story for another day of how a Kuwaiti family ended up spending summers in Mission Viejo. But I also spent 1 year there as when I was in sixth grade during the Iraqi invasion occupation of Kuwait in 1990-91, what's known as the First Gulf War, when we were displaced from Kuwait for 7 months. But then, you know, I lived on the East Coast and was living in Kuwait, and I saw a job posting for Cal Poly, and I remembered loving this area when I was younger, and I applied for the job and ended up one thing after, you know, the ball just kept rolling and suddenly I ended up here and loved it, you know, and I really enjoy being here. I mentioned that was when in fall of 2018 was when I started. So this is my fourth year teaching here now. And that's how I ended up here. It wasn't deeply planned or pre-planned, but it's sort of where life took me, and it's been a great experience so far.
Great. Well, I know the Central Coast is lucky to have all of you here. So thank you for choosing to make this your home. Rola, did you have something to add?
I was just going to say that, like, I'd like to add that most of that, like, Middle or Arabs that I know, they're mostly they came here because of their parents being professors or teaching at Cal Poly. I feel like most that I know.
Yeah, I think that's a big part. And there's also, I know, and I hope to capture it through the living histories, there's also a whole other contingent of Arab Americans, people from the Levantine that came here.
And are still here.
Yeah.
I was just going to also mention that even at Cal Poly, there isn't really, although there are, as Rola was mentioning, a lot of faculty here that I was slowly discovering from the Middle East. But there's never been any sort of, like, we don't have a faculty staff association, which a lot of other groups do. So we're actually in the process now of establishing a SWANA, so Southwest Asian North African Faculty and Staff Association. We have a very vibrant SWANA Student Association. And they're very active, and they've done a wonderful job. I mean, the students have really done a great job of sort of building that community on campus for students, because they're one of the smallest communities of color at Cal Poly. You know, they're very, very small. And so they found themselves, they're very active, and they've done some wonderful things to create this community. So even at Cal Poly, it is still a process, even though there's a lot of, you know, faculty and staff and students of Middle Eastern descent, it's still also in the early stages of figuring out who's who, who's there, who identifies as being from this region, and how do we come together as a sort of community on campus, as well as Sandra was saying, then connecting with the community off campus.
Yeah, and I think last year we started a SWANA Facebook group, and so we're slowly trying to connect and reach out and, you know, connect with our own communities through events, as well as connect with the greater community for education and connection. So as Farah said earlier, you know, it's multiple, it's academic, it's cultural, it's community-based, it's just, and all these levels we're really trying to connect because we're here.
Rola, what about at Cuesta College? Are there any SWANA student groups or communities?
I'm not sure. I'm not really sure. I don't really know. I also don't know a lot of people in Cal Poly, since I'm just like, I just started, I mean, not Cal Poly, in Cuesta, since I just started like the semester. I was online the first semester because I was in Egypt, so I wasn't really involved in anything. But yeah, I'm not really sure.
So if any of our listeners want to find out about these groups, and particularly about the Arab American Heritage Month events, where can they go? How can they find out more information?
I have to find this. I think there's a SWANA SLO on Facebook. I have to find that. And then also through my website, I'll be updating the different events we'll be having this month. That's cultural-creations.com are the two main areas. And then maybe they can reach out to the radio station and get our contact information, and we'll reach back out to them. And there's also a Gmail, swanaslow@gmail.com.
Great. Thank you. So before we wrap up the show, are there any final takeaways or things we didn't get to that you'd like our listeners to remember?
I guess the one big takeaway is just that the Middle East and its people in the United States and in the region itself are not what you see in the media, in films. You know, it's a very diverse region. It's also not, you know, I think we tend to think about, and I know this is probably also teaching Middle Eastern history at Cal Poly, there's a tendency to think of the region as just one that's constantly mired in war and conflict and repression and authoritarianism. And yes, those things all exist, right? We can't deny that. But it's also a place where people live and go through the same challenges and want the same things that people everywhere, including here in the US, do. And I think that's part of the most important thing is that we want to, I think it's important to de-exceptionalize sort of the Middle East and see it as just one, you know, similar to many other places in the world, even though we tend to think of it as very different.
Yeah, I would invite everyone to just do a little homework on their own. There's so much richness and culture and music and dance and food, and we are the most hospitable, warmest culture. I think you will never leave any of our houses hungry or unfed or unwelcome. And people don't know that necessarily.
Rola? Anything you'd like to add?
I don't know. I feel like Sandra and Farah already covered everything, but I don't know. It's like I'd like to add to what Sandra said. Like to any of my friends or my siblings' friends, when they come over, they can't leave the house without getting fed. They have to.
Yes.
I want to thank our guests, Dr. Farah Al-Nakib, Assistant Professor of History at Cal Poly and a specialist on the history of the modern Middle East. Also, Sandra Sarouf, community member and cultural consultant, and Rola El-Barberi, a student at Cuesta College. We've been talking about Arab American History Month and what it means for the Arab American community and Arab American identity on the Central Coast. We also discussed the specific events that have been held or hosted on the Central Coast for Arab American History Month, which is every April. Next week on Thursday, April 21st, please join host Fred Monroe as he speaks with guests Benjamin Ruttenberg, Associate Professor in the Biological Sciences Department at California Polytechnic State University, Cal Poly, and the director of the Center for Coastal Marine Sciences, and Yi-Hui Wang, postdoctoral researcher in the Biological Sciences Department at Cal Poly. They will discuss the future and possibility of offshore wind energy on the Central Coast. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation, in collaboration with KCBX. I am Lata Murthy. Thank you for joining us today.